Good evening and welcome back to Gillespie. I'm your host, Josh Gillespie. With me today is my crew as usual, Christy Kelly, Mark Warner, and on sound, Mike Jazerski. On today's show, we're going to give you guys more insight on who we are in addition to talking about the issues of the day. But this week's commentary is about a bill that recently passed the U.S. House that threatens one of the fundamental rights guaranteed to every one of us under the U.S. Constitution. More specifically, I'm referring to our fundamental right to free speech. I know, you're thinking, Gillespie, you're not telling us anything that we didn't already know. What is the Obama administration about if it isn't about violating the Constitution? And you know what? I couldn't really argue with you on that one. It seems like every time we turn around, this administration is scheming over new ways to trample on a document that many of us consider as one of the most important ever written. But one of the reasons this bill interests me is that it points out blatant hypocrisy that is endemic with liberalism in general, and this administration in particular. This notion that we have to do something or else, and who cares about the consequences. Now, flashback to the State of the Union address that President Obama gave earlier this year. One of the most talked about scenes was when the president scolded the members of the Supreme Court as if they were lowly interns, ignoring the fact that the judicial branch, headed by the Supreme Court, is an equal, branch of the government, not a branch subservient to the executive branch. Ignoring for the moment how a graduate of Harvard Law and alleged constitutional law instructor could be that ignorant, was I alone in being appalled by this blatant slap at our nation's most distinguished jurists? That sad affair was a result of the court's ruling in a case called Citizens United. While the court seems to feel that most political speech can be regulated, per its ruling on McCain-Feingold, it does seem to feel that corporations have a right to freedom of expression. Not being a former part-time constitutional law instructor like our president, I don't feel qualified to explain the difference, but just go with me on this one. So, not wanting to let another crisis go to waste, the White House convinced its allies in the House to pass this latest travesty of legislation called the Disclose Act, or H.R. 5175, in legislative parlance. This bill requires that every piece of politically related advertising, including the actual contributors who paid for the commercial. In other words, if I, Josh Gillespie, were to run a television commercial under my fictional 527 group, Josh for Indiana, I would have to personally appear at the end of the spot telling you on camera that I, Josh Gillespie, paid for this ad. Ignoring the reality of every political ad, including 15 seconds of this silliness, I haven't gotten to the best part yet. The bill exempts three major groups from its requirements: unions, shockingly enough, the National Rifle Association, and, proving that a good lobbyist is worth its weight in gold, the Humane Society. Yeah, you heard me correctly. In a lame attempt to get a few weak Republicans on board, the Democrats in the House actually put in an exemption for the hated NRA. I can only imagine that Charlton Heston is thinking up. I can only imagine what Charlton Heston is thinking up in the great rifle range in the sky. However, that silly attempt to placate the right may end up being this bill's undoing. While the Supreme Court has cited against free speech in the past, just think McConnell v. Federal Election Commission, the trigger is making this bill unconstitutional might just well be a clear and blatant violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. In the end, the Democrats' haste to do something will eventually backfire on them in what will be another GOP campaign commercial this fall. You can find more commentary on joshgillespie.net. But now it's time to reintroduce you guys to everybody who we got here. Again, I have Christy Kelly with me of ChristyKelly.com and HoosierAccess.com. Mark Warner, who is doing something on his Twitter machine with HoosierAccess.com. And, of course, my loyal ally on the sound, Mike Jazerski, also of HoosierAccess.com. Guys, we got some craziness going on. I know we've talked about the Disclose Act. This is the third week we've brought it up, I believe. But
why doesn't bills of attainder come into play here with these special exceptions that have been carved out for these various groups in this act?
Well, that's a good question. And I wish I actually had an answer for you. But I know that there were emails, countless emails from organizations saying oppose this piece of legislation because of the special exemptions. What's interesting is that, you know, there were actually some members out there who were saying, you know what, we might actually be fine with this bill if it was all-encompassing, then if it didn't give special exemptions, or if it just didn't exist at all. You know, we can't be carving out special exceptions for organizations saying that they're okay to skirt you know, some particular piece of legislation just because they have power and influence, whereas you have another organization that must be confined to it because, oh, they don't have a good enough lobbyist.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's – as much as I support the NRA, I'm a little concerned about their supporting of this bill just because they're getting a little bit carved out for them. Well, are they concerned about the First Amendment rights for anybody else?
Well, from what I've heard, this bill shouldn't be a total criticism on the NRA. Now, they are rightfully coming under criticism for their support of this legislation and for the special carve-out that they got. But from what I've heard, this doesn't – their being involved in this doesn't exactly reflect everybody on the board of the NRA. I don't want to throw the NRA into one giant pot that says that, you know, they're as evil as the unions.
We do need to hold, you know, those who ally with us to a high standard. We don't want
absolutely.
People to come out and say, well, you're a hypocrite. You know what I mean? And I'm just concerned that, well, they've got their piece, but what about what makes them so special?
Again, I think it was just because that there was a play to be able to get Republicans on board with this, mm-hmm. that it was in an effort to make this a bipartisan bill. And so how are we going to get Republicans onto this? Well, they'll hold on to their guns. So let's get the NRA involved. But whereas the NRA is involved, the Gun Owners of America, who are now becoming a more powerful organization for Second Amendment rights because of the NRA's involvement in the Disclose Act, you know, they're getting pushed to the side. And you have conservatives out there who would just love the NRA, say that they were the best thing since sliced bread, and that they epitomizing everything that we believe in the Second Amendment. They're now questioning that.
Well, the thing about the NRA, too, is that some of their endorsements that are coming down, that seem to be coming down the line, are being questioned very heavily. Mm-hmm. In fact, among some carriers.
Brad.
Harry Reid is even being rumored as will be endorsed by the NRA, as mm-hmm. opposed to the Tea Party candidate who won their.
Katie Hayworth?
No, that's Arizona. We're talking about Sharon Angle. Sharon Angle and
Harry Reid.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
And there's other examples of people that firearms owners are saying, they're a little squishy on the issue, but yet they're earning the NRA endorsement. And from what I understand from people who have run for office and gotten the endorsement at the state level mm-hmm. Here in Indiana is that, you know, a lot of the NRA's rating is based on that questionnaire you send in.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, not only are you a gun owner, but you're also a member of the NRA, correct?
I didn't.
Did you?
I still get the emails.
Lapsed. Okay, the dues have lapsed, but you still get the emails, so you know that you know who they're supporting. You get all the questionnaires and everything else. Before we started the show, you were talking about how it seems as if you didn't say this specifically, but it seems like this is the impression that I get from the NRA that they're trying to come back now and say that they're going to be holding senators accountable for their vote on Kagan.
Exactly.
So, you know, it seems as if they're trying to make good with conservatives again, saying, you know, we may have messed up with the Disclose Act, and there's still a chance it may not pass, but if you support Kagan, well, we have your number. Do you think that still jives with a lot of the NRA membership?
I think it's a little bit of damage control. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this kind of stuff wouldn't happen back when Charlton Heston was still in charge. But mm-hmm. Under the leadership that's in there now, you know, there's a few people and there's some bulletin boards on the internet for firearms owners that are not too pleased with the NRA and thinks they've become too... you know, to Washington, they've been drinking the water too much, or, you know, whatever phrase you want to use to apply to it. Mm-hmm. They're saying, you know, we need an independent, you know, group that really supports us, you know, and, you know, there's others, there's GOA, there's Second Amendment Patriots or whatever, you know, and there's other groups out there that are basically going around saying, hey, you know, incursion into our rights is welcomed, and you know they feel like, well, if the NRA caved on Disclose, will they cave on something else in the future?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find interesting here is, I mean, with this legislation in general, and I think that this is what this legislation is, a slap in the face of the Supreme Court. You know, mentioned in the monologue how the president, during his State of the Union address, basically smacked down the judiciary right there, the SCOTUS, and you had it was Justice Alito who responded, just mouthed the words "not true" to how President Obama was basically slamming the court. And here, after they have struck down particular pieces of legislation in the Citizens United case, here they're coming back. The House is coming back and trying to reinstate these same rules that were struck down. And I mean, this seems like we're starting to get another classic showdown between SCOTUS and POTUS.
And because even with this nominee who is up there now, that still will only make it a 5-4 because it's you're replacing a liberal with a liberal.
That's right. That's right. I'm sorry, you're about to say something there.
Well, you know, the power struggle that we have here is, you know, President Obama wants to be more than just President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's continually taking power wherever he can. And this certainly is one of the things that you could see how angry he was at how dare the Supreme Court
mm-hmm.
think that they're going to step in on something like this. And he's going to show them. We have many other, I guess we're running out of time, but we're going to discuss other power trips that he's taking.
We are. We'll further discuss how there is a growing rift between SCOTUS and POTUS, and we'll be touching on other issues today as well. This is going to be a pretty hot-button show. We'll be right back after these messages. We hope you stick around. And welcome back to Gillespie. We are going to take this time to continue talking about the growing rift between SCOTUS and POTUS, but mostly judicial activism. You saw earlier this week, excuse me, I should say, it wasn't this week because yesterday was Monday. It was Thursday of last week. A federal district court in Boston struck down DOMA. And it was Judge Joseph L. Turow ruled that the defense of marriage law violates the constitutional right of married same-sex couples to equal protection under the law and upends the federal government's long history of allowing states to set their own marriage laws. Now, we know that this has been upending DOMA, overturning DOMA, has been a part of the Obama administration. And we know that this is definitely something like this would definitely be coming at odds with the Justice Roberts-led Supreme Court. So I am sure that DOMA will eventually be making its way to the Supreme Court. We'll see how that plays out. But right now, we're going to kind of take a branch off that SCOTUS-POTUS battle to talk a little bit about gay marriage. This is going to be a segment that some of us are a little bit uncomfortable to talk about, but it's definitely going to be some fireworks. And just discussing this off the radio, off air here, we had some conversation. We're like, we got to stop talking because if we talk too much about this, we're not going to have enough for this segment. So, all right, an activist judge overturns DOMA,
and it wasn't from the Ninth Circuit either.
No, it was from Boston. It was the Federal District Court in Boston, where, if we all remember correctly, Massachusetts.
Barney Frank.
Well, no, not that so much, but Boston or Massachusetts was the first state to allow gay marriage because of a activist judge. 30 states in the union have passed successfully. Federal or state constitutional amendments banning gay marriage, even in states as California twice, and Maine. From California to Maine, from sea to shining sea,
unfortunately, Indiana is not one of them.
Indiana is not one of those laws. We have an activist speaker, so to speak.
Yes,
House Speaker. But so we've been discussing this and how we feel about. Actually, the federal government's role in marriage, because most of us kind of take a very libertarian stance that we want government out of our lives. You know,
yes,
we want very little government interventionism into our lives. But when it comes to marriage, things take a bit of a turn. We don't believe that. Well, in this sense, we don't. We maybe it's a similar stance. I don't know. This is what this conversation has been about, and this is what we want you guys to be hearing. So, Mark, you were leading into something very big here. We were talking about is being gay something that is chosen, or is it something that you're born with?
Does that question important in the decision? I mean, is that what everything hinges on for?
I think
what everything
hinges
on for this marriage, gay marriage argument?
Here's the thing: I'm not the judge nor the jury on this, whether you made a choice or whether you're born with it. My issue is government being involved in the marriage game anyway.
Yeah.
Now you're talking. This is like ultra libertarian perspective.
This
goes down to that government shouldn't even be
I will probably not make any major fans when I say this, but government needs to stay completely out of this.
They shouldn't even be issuing marriage license.
I don't want the federal government telling me how to raise my kids. In fact, I'd like them to quit trying to educate America's kids. And so why would I be interested in having them involved in marriage?
Which leads to this argument. If you want the government out of marriage, should the government get out of divorces?
Well,
here's the thing.
That's a very good question.
That is a good question. Here's the thing. I know of two different gay couples that I know personally and I am friends with. They both work. They both pay taxes. They own a home. They are contributing to society.
Actually, they've started their own business successfully.
Yeah. So they've done everything that our country is about. Okay? But denying those two the right to get married and share their benefits, to me, that's BS. They should have a right. That guy should have a right. If he has a good insurance plan at work and the other guy has a good insurance plan at work and whichever is the best option, go with that insurance plan and they are able to reap those benefits.
Should it perhaps just be even of a more libertarian view of let the insurance company decide if they want to cover that same-sex domestic partner.
I think that's a very good idea.
That is a good idea.
And frankly, I'm with you on this, Mark. I don't understand why couples like that shouldn't be allowed to share insurance options.
Now, there's rights when they're sick in the hospital as well.
Well, yeah.
So
here's the other thing. I've had this discussion with a person in my life. We will go unnamed. Healthcare wouldn't be so expensive if it wasn't for the gay people. Really?
Well, that's just
really
a dumb thing to say.
Really? Are
that's
you kidding
a dumb
me?
Thing to say.
Play me another riddle, please, because I worked in social. I worked with homeless people for 7 years. 7 years. And not all homeless people are bad people. They fell on their hard times and they've come out of it. But you have some out there that would just rather be homeless and suck off the system for the rest of their lives. And you also got regular people that suck off the system for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter where they live. I got people in my neighborhood and I live in the suburbs that suck off the system. Okay. But don't tell me that healthcare is rising because of the gay community, because I will call your BS on it right then and there. Because
that's
you
one
no
of the dumbest
of
statements.
Right.
I already
right.
have something scheduled for today's Tuesday evening stupid, but that's a pretty
That's close.
That's close.
That's
so
right,
and
that's
here's
right
the
there.
Other thing. Moral issue aside, do I think it's morally wrong? Yes, I do. My beliefs say it's morally wrong. Do I judge those people? No, because I've always been taught on my moral side is a sin is a sin is a sin, no matter if you steal the candy bar out of the store or if you murder that guy down the street.
Amen.
It's a sin, and that's fine. None of us in this room, or a matter of fact, none of us in this country are perfect. So when you start throwing stones at the gay community going, you guys don't deserve to get married, and you guys don't deserve – no. They deserve every right – that my wife and I have, They deserve every right that whoever's couples out, they deserve those rights.
Here's where I would probably disagree with you. And our first disagreement on Gillespie.
Whoa.
Will we survive?
This should be fun.
I don't believe in same-sex marriage. I don't. I do believe that government should be out of the business of marriage. And I do like the concept of divorce. Of getting out of the... Getting out of divorce. Wow.
Stop right there.
I don't
like the concept of divorce, but I do like the concept of government getting out of divorce. That's what I was saying. Anyway.
Of letting the government decide the rules, circumstances.
Yeah. Well, like Indiana is a no-fault state in terms of divorce. And I know that's not the way it is in every state. But that said, I don't believe in same-sex marriage. I believe in a man and a woman is marriage. That said, I do believe that the rights that we've discussed, the healthcare issues, to that matter, should not be limited to straight couples only.
Okay, what's the problem with same-sex marriage?
Okay, this is we're going to get into the moral issue here. This is where it comes down to a theological belief that marriage is between a man and a woman.
I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, okay. But at the same time,
and a gay marriage is basically
beliefs, because I don't want the theological beliefs of Sharia law coming in. I don't want the theological beliefs of the tree huggers.
Theological beliefs?
They worship the earth. They've got their own. They also, you know, Marxism is, you could say, can have extent of theology as they worship all the words that and hang on his words. So they have their own sins that they're trying to right now. Mm-hmm. The federal government and Obama wants to impose upon us when we
sin, like Sharia law.
Well, when we drive our SUVs, mm-hmm. and when we in the way we build our houses and the rulings of the EPA and you know, our speech, these sorts of things that they want to impose upon us that they feel are sins. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just want to be very careful about, I have very strong theological beliefs, but I don't want other theological beliefs imposed on me. So I have to be very cautious about imposing mine on others.
And we have to look at how DOMA was passed in the first place. I mean, if you do just basic research on DOMA, it passed the House and the Senate overwhelmingly.
Bipartisan, even.
Yes. And was signed into law by Bill Clinton.
But what?
Well, a man with his own sins.
Well, exactly.
What's my issue is I've had people come to me, well, you want the church to. No. The church should not be required to marry these people.
Exactly. They should.
But what I'm saying is, why can't these two go down to the courthouse and get married?
Those people can go to that one church on 56th Street.
It's a government building. They pay taxes.
No, they can't.
Well, that's where I say that marriage should be taken out of the courthouse.
Well, I'm just saying, if you took the view of getting government out of the marriage licensing business
if you're talking about that way, yes. Then I see where you're going.
Yeah, but you see where I'm going.
But Mark, again, we come back to the whole, you know, if government completely gets out of the marriage business, then gay couples cannot go down to the courthouse.
Well, they've got their own churches.
Married.
There's the Unitarian Church, and there's that, Churches of God.
There's the Jesus Metropolitan Church.
There are all kinds of churches out there that
would be willing to do that. And that's fine. That's their belief.
But are you violating the – I believe this is – as we were looking at – I was looking at it earlier. It is the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution by doing that.
Could you explain that?
I have the Constitution pulled up right now on my computer.
I got one in my pocket.
I got one on my iPhone.
Right here.
Because the iPhone rocks. Your iPhones suck. Okay. Now, the full faith and credit clause, it refers to Article 4, Section 1. It addresses the duties that states within the United States have to respect the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of other states. According to the Supreme Court, there is a difference between the credit owed to laws, i.e. legislative measures and common law, as compared to the credit owed to judgments. Well, now we're certainly starting to get into the minutiae of the full faith and credit clause. But basically, that is what Congress said that DOMA is subject to, is a full faith and credit clause, that if you get married, it is actually reaffirming existing law that if you get married in Massachusetts as a straight couple, it has to be acknowledged in Indiana, here in Indiana. But according to DOMA, if you get married as a gay couple in Massachusetts, which that is only allowed because a judge said it was okay. That didn't come to before the voters. A judge said that was okay. And every other constitutional state constitutional law that has been passed by the voters.
Or
and this is why.
Well, no, it's always done by
whether it's through judicial activism or referendums or legislation. We can't. We keep getting our constitution.
And this is why.
And I just want to see how this full faith and credit clause can.
Now here's something I presented to a Chicago attorney once. The discussion was actually
what, Chicago?
I lived in downstate Illinois at the time, and a Chicago attorney was a friend of a friend, and I presented this proposition to him. And the discussion was actually emergency medical care on a minor,
mm-hmm.
and I had brought up the notion that in some states still, well, I'll give you one example, Mississippi, a 14-year-old can legally marry. However, in the state of Indiana, I believe it's 16 or 17. 16 or 17. So say if a...
But isn't that with parental consent?
I'm not sure the minutia behind it, but...
That's an important one, though.
Well, no, I'm just saying, though, a 14-year-old could be legally married in another state, but yet that same marriage would be illegal in another state. Think about that. Let's go to break.
All right. Welcome back to Gillespie. I thought we were going to be going on and talking about Dr. Donald Berwick, who was a recess appointment by President Obama, the president's rationer-in-chief. But Mark is being a little stooge over there and wants to pursue this conversation. I'm going to let it because this was a pretty the topic of gay marriage is a very good topic to discuss, and it's interesting to have different opinions here on the show. And I want to let Mark pursue this. And so we'll get to Donald Berwick if we have time. So where are you going here, Mark? Where are you going here?
Look, there is so much bureaucracy and red tape in our government that when they get involved in stuff they don't need to be getting involved in, it just makes it harder because then we're in this area now, in this year, in this political climate where it's an issue. And if they would have just stayed out of it completely, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Now you're talking about overturning 150 years plus of government involvement in marriage.
What I'm saying is I know morally it's wrong, but honestly, I'm going to get hung for this one, but I'm tired of some on the Christian right that rail on this issue when we have bigger and better issues to worry about.
Now, if that's where you're going.
Hold on. Listen, let me finish.
This is an important issue.
Okay. Fiscally, how does gay marriage hurt our country? How does gay marriage hurt our country fiscally?
No,
it
Mark.
Doesn't.
It doesn't.
But you know what? I think the problem here is that we have a strong tradition of marriage between a man and a woman. Okay, and this has
and
been a Christian country, and I think we are really we're mourning the loss of the Christianity in our country as it's been diluted, and now we're kind of in the post-Christian era here, and it's very difficult for...
Who says this is a post-Christian era?
I think it's...
Look around.
I don't see the ragheads with anything yet.
Well, I would say it's I wouldn't, post-Christian may not be the exact word I would use. Probably post. I would say post-modern.
Do you think this Europe is beyond is in a post-Christian era? Do you think
probably because the yabba-dabbas have taken over?
And I think that's what we're watching. We can see how it's happened there, and it's coming. And if we continue down this path, it's exactly where it will be post-Christian. I think we are right there at the doorway. So I do call it that.
But, well, we do have a Muslim president now.
But
no, please. Oh my God.
We have an Islamic sympathizer as president.
Here's the thing.
I don't want to call him.
Our country is in so much fiscal irresponsibility right now that we have the right over here and the left over here going, well, we want this and we want this and they can't have that and they can't have that and da 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 da. Nothing gets fixed. Nothing gets done.
Actually, and I think we just passed a massive healthcare overhaul.
I'd rather the majority of Americans didn't want, but frankly,
that's something that got done.
Okay, what I'm saying is fiscal responsibility is not being handled. Our government is way out of control, and they want their hands in everything. And then we have people going, well, we want the Constitution back in place. Well, show me in the Constitution where it says two guys and two girls cannot get married.
Okay, let's take this to the next one. Can a man marry a child, or a woman marry a child?
Okay, now you're taking this to an extreme.
Well,
and
homosexuality is an extreme.
Okay, are homosexuality guys pedophiles?
Maybe
they aren't. I know a lot of Christians, a lot of pastors that were pedophiles.
Yeah, the entire Catholic Church.
No! Careful!
There's been a lot of pastors.
This is my show, and we're not going to be criticizing an entire church for being pedophiles just because of the acts of a few priests.
There's been a lot of pastors doing it too. There's a lot of pastors doing it. There's a lot of regular people out there that are doing this, and I dealt with a lot of pedophiles when I was in working with these people for 7 years, and I can tell you, none of them were gay. None of them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that gay is right. And I'm not saying pedophile is right. None of that is right. And if I ever have kids and I find out somebody ever molested my child, they won't have to worry about the law getting to them.
These are two consenting adults. I think it's far different. Whose theology is going to reign? And, you know, and I don't see that this is in the Constitution that we can deny. That's just where
there's nothing in the Constitution.
I just don't see how we can deny it to them constitutionally, but at the same time, I do think it's between a man and a woman.
I close the tab, but I'll find it again.
What is it?
About DOMA, where they claim DOMA under the 10th Amendment.
Okay, but listen.
Is this in that Boston Globe article?
No, it is not.
Listen, we have people that call themselves Constitution watchdogs. I want us back to the Constitution, blah, 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 blah. But they want their agenda, that is half of it is not even in the Constitution, done on their. So it's okay that their agenda gets through under no Constitution, but it's not okay if that person's agenda doesn't get through. And this is why our country's in a position where we're at now.
Well, that's what the Constitution is supposed to protect us from, these agendas. And that's why I think I'm standing here in this position, because I want to be protected from other people's agendas, just like they want to be protected against mine. And that's what I see the Constitution doing for all of us.
And so this is where I go back to the Constitution watchdogs. If you're really a Constitution watchdog, read your Constitution, because there's nothing in there.
The law known as DOMA had two effects.
Which article was it? Sorry.
Just Google DOMA and the first link. No state, in parentheses, or other political subdivision within the United States needs to treat a relationship between persons of the same sex as a marriage, even if the relationship is considered marriage in another state. The federal government defines marriage as a legal union exclusively between one man and one woman. And frankly, that seems to be where the judge had the issue, was that the federal government is saying that marriage is exclusively between one man and one woman. The bill was passed by Congress by a vote of 85 to 14 in the Senate and a vote by 342 to 67 in the House, and was signed into law by President Clinton in 1996.
And what are they basing this law on?
Well, the
Article 4, Section 1.
Article 4, Section 1.
Okay.
Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state.
I read that.
And the Congress may by general laws prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effects thereof.
Okay, so then I go to this.
Amendment 14, citizenship rights. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person with its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Okay. This is where we discuss the constitutionality of DOMA. The constitutional most, and I'm reading this from, of course, the always all-knowing Wikipedia. It never lies. It never lies. The constitutional issues most relevant to DOMA are the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment, which you bring up, which is concerned with the definition of marriage and spouse section of DOMA, and the full faith and credit clause, which is primarily concerned with the powers reserved to the states section of DOMA. A fundamental right to marriage, at least marriage defined as one man and one woman, overriding the provisions of state law, was found in Loving v. Virginia, Zablocki v. Redhale, and Turner v. Safley. The full faith and credit clause of the United States Constitution obligates states to give full faith and credit to public acts, records, judicial, blah, 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 as we've said before. The effects clause, Article 4, Section 1, grants Congress the authority to prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved, and the effect thereof. Whether DOMA is appropriate exercise of this power is disputed. That's where the federal judge comes in. Critics of DOMA argue that the law is unconstitutional on several grounds. DOMA exceeds congressional authority in violation to the 10th Amendment. Congress overreached its authority under the full faith and credit clause, and the law illegally discriminates and violates equal protection clause. The law violates the fundamental right to marriage under the due process clause. I find it interesting that there is a fundamental right to marriage, because in the Bill of Rights, again, I don't see that listed.
My whole issue is a lot of people are making this argument that on the moral side, and I agree with them on the moral issue, but you can't, my God, you can't. Look, I am a very strong Christian, and my thing is if a person comes out, and a lot of people disagree with me on this, but I'm not one to go out there and just start spouting off my beliefs because I think you need it. That's not for me to judge. And honestly, our government and some of our people that are pushing this agenda of these two guys can't get married, blah, 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 because it's morally wrong. Well, yes, correct, it is. But show me where, show me how this is hurting. I could care less.
Careful where you're going there.
I'm at home, and how is those two guys or those two ladies affecting my life by me sitting at home and doing my thing when they're out doing their thing? How is that going to affect my life? I don't care. That's their decision. Now, if they come to me personally and going, you know, I've heard it's morally wrong, tell me why. I'm going to tell them why it's morally wrong.
But I'm
not going to judge
but
them.
But you have them going through the courts, whereas you've had the people who have spoken on this issue plenty of times and have not supported their cause. But in an effort to get their cause passed, they get activist judges to overturn existing law.
Who's that's in charge, the judges or the legislatures?
That's
well,
right.
If we're going to go this route, scrap the legislators and just have judges making all the laws. Wrong.
No. I mean, we have California has passed their same-sex marriage amendment twice. It has come under legal dispute twice. I mean,
let's talk about that for a second.
We only got 2 minutes to talk about.
Okay. Well, we know that the people in California who actually supported Prop 8, what has happened to them with the gay activists? And this is one of the problems that I have with the situation, why it was so difficult for me to even come to this, because it was hard for me to see through the harassment and the intimidation, the vandalism and of the gay activists to hear their cause, because they essentially want to silence anybody who stands against them. So I haven't even been able to – the arguments I don't think have been able – to come out concisely because of you are essentially, if you don't stand for gay marriage, you are going to be ostracized in this community or nationally, as we've seen the economic hardships where people have lost their jobs. They will target their employers. So I'm very concerned about the freedom of both parties on both sides to be able to bring this debate and for our views to be heard respectfully on both sides of the issue.
I'll say this as we're coming to the closing moments here of this segment.
All I got to say is, as a person who was once married myself, what do these gays think they're getting into?
Let me just say this.
Good point, Mike.
And Christy, I think that you bring up a good point, but I think we need to look at the other point, and that's something that Mark has brought up, that the activists for same-sex marriage, I would say, haven't made their case very well. The arguments against same-sex marriage haven't made their case very well. The simple fact is we're in a really tough spot as a country right now. We do need to address the fiscal situations, and until we get that straightened out, I think we need to be putting a hold on something like this. But, you know, frankly, these judicial activists are bringing it to the forefront, and it may be something that we need to address sooner rather than later, and that's just because we're being forced to at this point. We've run out of time in this segment. We'll be right back, and hopefully we'll lighten up the mood a bit. And welcome back to Gillespie. All right, on top of that conversation, we're gonna break it down for you. We're gonna make it a little bit lighthearted here. Everyone here is a cracker. And
some of us are more cracked than the others.
Yes, I'm looking at a particular bald individual across the way from me. It was a little
Christy,
bit more cracked.
Christy, when did you
up.
Shave your head?
We're going to bring up this week's Tuesday Evening Stupid. This week's Tuesday Evening Stupid is brought to you by Margaritaville and Jimmy Buffett. Yeah,
Cheeseburger in Paradise.
That's right.
Hey, there's one
at
right up
420.
The road.
It's a very good restaurant. I like it.
I've never been there, but
they
I actually do hear it's good.
They have live music, and it's delicious.
Anyway, according to FoxNews.com, singer Jimmy Buffett is just another mad Gulf Coast native when it comes to the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. But with the exception, he's got millions of fans and a way to help lift their spirits over the seemingly endless crisis. How does he do that? He blames George W. Bush.
Zing.
Oh.
It was.
Oh, Bush. Christy.
Okay, this is.
What did he say?
This is what he said.
What did Mr. Buffett say?
Jimmy says, to me, it was more about 8 years of bad policy before Obama got there that let this happen. It was Dracula running the blood bank in terms of oil and leases, he says. I think that has more to do with it than how the president reacted to it.
And how many millions, maybe not millions, but thousands of dollars did BP give?
Right on the millions.
Millions. How many millions of dollars did BP give President Obama?
A lot more millions than what I've got.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, they gave more to Democrats.
Yeah, BP,
and
BP
I bought
is
gas
an
at BP
Obama
today.
Company, so...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm such a good Republican.
Buying gas at BP, and they're giving money to Democrats? Oh, wait a minute. The stations are independently owned and operated and don't have anything
right.
to do with BP.
Well, you know what? We always have to blame. The blame thing kind of annoys me, period. Whether, you know, the tired blame Bush thing aside.
Miss me yet?
Yeah.
Accidents happen. You know what I mean?
This is a pretty big accident.
You know what?
Accidents do happen. And I think this is an accident. And I think between regulations, what regulations could have caused this accident?
If this had been Hugo Chavez and Sitko, would the left be as up in arms as they are?
They would have taken Barney Frank down there and plugged the hole with him.
Here's the thing. Okay. This same exact situation that is going on down on the Gulf Coast is going on off the coast of Africa. I believe it's Djibouti.
D-I-J-I-B-O-U-T-I.
It's DJ.
Yeah, that's why I said D-J-I-B-O-U-T-I.
Anyways, Djibouti. It's off the coast of Djibouti where Shell and Exxon have the same oil spill going off the coast.
Right now?
That BP does off the Gulf Coast. I believe I heard that.
It wasn't
like something I read off the Onion or anything. This is actually a legit news source, and unfortunately,
I've been told that Nigeria has these things all the time.
Nigeria's really? Inland.
No, Nigeria's on the coast.
Nigeria's on the coast?
Yes. They're in that little crux of Africa, you know, where the Big Bend kind of comes around and goes south.
You're causing me to actually use Google now. But
that's because, you know, most of the hurricanes that hit the eastern seaboard and the Gulf Coast originate in that area.
Yeah, you're right. There it is. Right there on it.
I know my
state.
Geography.
Yes, you do. It is a coastal African state.
What's the capital of Indiana?
What does that have to do with
that? What does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
I was just saying. You knew your geography. I was just trying to test you. What is the capital of Indiana?
Here's the thing. Do you ever get the impression that with Democrats, nothing in this country happened before the year 2001? Yeah. And that whatever has happened, it's all Bush's fault?
And here's the thing that bugs me about Democrats.
They're still sore over Florida.
Well, yeah, they are still sore.
Yeah, they haven't got over that one yet. But here's what bugs me about Democrats is they took control in 2006. I mean, they just...
Now, hold on. They had control not only of the House and Senate in 2006. They also had control of the Senate in 2002 when Jim Jeffords switched sides, made the Senate a 50-50 split. Well, I guess in that case, actually,
but
Dick Cheney is the tying vote. But Bush did not have 8 years of complete control. It's not as if those last 2 years of his presidency, he was telling the Democrats in Congress what to do.
More the other way around.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
The last 2 years.
From 06 to 08.
Yeah, the last 2 years of the Bush presidency.
Oh, okay.
The last 2 years.
Oh, okay. All right, I see what you're saying now. Right. I was like, what are you talking about?
And they've had 4 years three and a half years of congressional control. And we have seen here's okay.
Let me
Mike,
ask you.
You were asking me what are our segments for Tuesday Evening Stupid? And I said, I only have one. I just remembered we have number two. Congressman Joe Donnelly, you can find this on joshgillespie.com. Congressman Joe Donnelly on his fiscal issues section.
Soon to
of
be
his,
former Congressman Joe Donnelly.
Yes.
Okay, boss.
he had on his website that our nation's national debt is currently just above $8 trillion. Unfortunately, he must have been campaigning in the year 2006 when our national debt was close to
Well, that
to
was
$8
his initial campaign
dollars.
Was 06.
Yes,
just
it was.
Nobody
exactly,
has updated
it was.
Since.
And so he had that on his website, which is funny because you can go to any place on the web. You can download widgets that have your current national debt clock. There's a big giant clock in New York City
that they had to update to put that extra digit on it.
That's right, because our national debt, which is funny because the picture of it actually even then showed $12 trillion, which is funny. You Google national debt, you'll find these things. This isn't hard. There's even a website, usdebt.org, and all it is this giant computer that shows what our current debt is, what it is per person, what it is per taxpayer, because we owe more as taxpayers than we do as individuals. And he had that up yesterday morning. By the afternoon, the site had been fixed. Well, it hadn't been fixed, but the content had been pulled.
Imagine that.
And here, the Democrats, you know, they're complaining about all this excessive spending done by the Bush administration. But since Democrats took over in 2007, when our national debt was sitting at $8 trillion, it has risen by $5 trillion in just 4 years. Okay, we can talk about excessive war spending, but $5 trillion in 4 years? That's over a trillion a year, people.
And let me just ask a little quick question here. Who writes the laws, and who writes the budgets, and who?
I mean, didn't we
what budget?
What budget?
Budget?
Oh, wait a minute. They thought we
budget.
Oh, that's right.
Budget.
No budget.
No.
Sorry.
We don't do budgets. That's so 2008.
That's so 2009, actually, because 2010 is deemed a budget.
Okay, but who writes this stuff?
That is the express purpose of those we elect to Congress, is to write a budget.
So, technically, Bush has his budget, and then Congress has...
To approve it. But they also have to... I mean, if they don't write, they don't like what he has, they have to write one themselves.
I am shocked.
I know.
This is how government works?
Just imagine if Pat Power had sat down and decided, we're not going to do a state budget this year in the General Assembly. There's not too much that the Indiana General Assembly has to do in the budget cycle, except write a budget.
In fact, that's almost what he tried to do in 2009, was it? When the Indiana General Assembly had to go to a special session.
To settle this.
To settle
My
a
man
budget.
Mitch, 2012.
You can promote that. I will let you. Which is another topic we could discuss for a future debate, 2012 Republican candidates.
I've got mine.
Mitch Daniels.
Which I have yet to get a candidate because I'm not too impressed with all that's out there. But here's the thing. We have another celebrity. I want to use the word celebutant because it's a fun word, but the dude's old. So, and male. So
that's not going to work.
Yeah, so it's not going to work. So we have someone out there, some celebrity who likes to suck down on margaritas, who thinks he knows a lot about oil drilling policy. And clearly, it is the Dracula that is George W. Bush sucking at the souls of Americans is the reason we have...
I'll say the same thing to Jimmy Buffett that I said to John Mellencamp. You know, just shut up and sing.
Shut up and sing.
That's right. And if you like Jimmy Buffett, that's all you want to do.
I like him a lot. I always
you know,
saw
if you like his hamburgers.
Parrot head,
yeah, that's right.
And now I'm kind of like,
and kind of annoyed by him.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Shut up and sing. Shut up and act. You know, I don't care about your political opinion.
What should we say?
Shut up and call that ball game, Keith Olbermann.
That's right. Donnelly.
Joe Donnelly.
Chris Donnelly,
I believe, is the actor.
Should we do shut up and count?
Shut up and count.
Shut up and count.
Yeah, just shut up and count. Shut up and turn on the internet.
Shut up and do a budget.
Yeah, there you go. I like that one. Do a budget.
Shocker. Joe Donnelly. Pwned,
yes.
By Josh Gillespie.
Oh, thank you.
God.
That was uber pwnage.
Good job, Josh.
Thank you. That's what we call keeping our Congress accountable, even if it is in their campaigns. So, anyway, I think that's probably actually going to do it for us this week on Gillespie. Please continue to tune us in every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. I want you to make sure that you stay around for future shows. We got a great lineup here on FTR Radio.
And I believe coming up later tonight is SGP on FTR Radio.
Smart Girl Report.
Smart Girl Report, yes.
We have the Smart Girl Report.
Jenny Erickson.
Tonight on Gillespie, immediately following us, is the awesome Aaron Proctor Show. 9 o'clock, you got Duke Over America. 10 o'clock, you got the Smart Girl Report with Jenny Erickson and the Armchair Energist at 11. Thank you guys for tuning in with us tonight. I know we didn't have a guest, but you had us. We had a lot to talk about. It was a lot of fun. We disagreed on a couple of things. Why? Because that's what conservatives do. They discuss the issues. They may not agree on everything, but we have a conversation. We're still friends in the end. Anyway.
I really don't like you now. So I'm just going to be honest.
And then for that reason, you're not on the show next week. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Have a great evening, guys.